Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Denim and Boots podcast. We are on episode 22 today, and we are joined by Leonard of Benzac Denim Developers, and we're going to be talking about the details of jeans. And I am one of your hosts, Jake, aka Almost Vintage Style.
And my name is Thomas, aka Denim Hunters.
And I'm Leonard, founder of Benzac Denim Developers.
Great. So thank you for coming on to the show, Leonard.
Thank you for having me.
Been really looking forward to this one. Leonard and I, we go back quite a few years already, I think. I can't exactly remember when we met, but it's probably been in Amsterdam. Sometimes that's where you're based. So very happy to have you on the show. Like you said, Jake, the topic of today, we're going to be talking about the details of jeans. And before we get to that, we're just quickly going to hear your story, but before we get to that part, we have the news. And Leonard, why don't you open? Because I know you have some news coming out this autumn.
Yeah. We have, after 6 years on the market, we are finally going to launch our very, very first women's jeans as well. So this is going to be basically the men's concept turned into a women's fit. So we're talking about heavy denim, 15 ounce, non-stretch, selvage, unwashed, exactly the same as we do for our men's stuff, but then for women's.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
Yeah, so that's pretty exciting.
It's quite niche, I guess.
Yeah, it is. It is. It is a niche within our niche, let's say.
Yeah.
But we get quite some requests for it. So I thought, well, now it's the time to do this.
Was it because
let's see where it goes.
Was it because your girlfriend was asking you to make some jeans for her?
Obviously.
She was tired of wearing.
Well, not only my girlfriend.
Yeah, okay.
Like there's a lot of, there's more women than you would think that are really interested in trying this this unwashed dry denim thing, you know.
Nice.
Wear it in yourself, create your own fading pattern.
Yeah.
But it's still it is a niche. I'm fully aware of that.
That's cool.
Yeah.
So
it's very cool though, honestly. Like it's one of those things where like you know, larger dude sizings and women's sizing, it's kind of a catch 22. People think we can't have it because there's not enough of them. Well, there's not enough of them because we don't have it. So I didn't even know about this. So honestly, hats off to you, Leonard, for actually, you know, taking the plunge and doing this. I think that's really cool.
Nice.
Thank you.
And they'll be coming out October, you told me.
Yeah, the plan is to launch them beginning of October.
Okay.
So they are in full pre-production preparation right now.
Mm-hmm.
We just did some, we just shot some photos last week. We made a video, which we do a lot, obviously, if you follow the brand a little bit.
Yeah.
But yeah, everything is in production, let's say.
Nice.
Should be ready beginning of October.
Cool. And Jake, you also had some news for this one.
Yeah, I have some sad news slightly. I weightlifted myself out of one of my favorite leather jackets.
Wow.
It's my Real McCoy's Red Silk A2. I it's been on the bubble since I went back to the gym. And now like it just, I can't move my arms basically in it. Like the shoulders and the chest, but especially like the shoulders and everything, like the back, it just doesn't fit anymore. So I've already been talking to some people that are already interested in it, hopefully, but I'll be replacing it with something, I think, just cause I can't, and it'll almost certainly be Shinky again. I love Shinky, but I'm really sad, honestly, cause this is the oldest denim jacket the oldest leather jacket that's still in my collection, honestly. It's a good reason. It's not due to my waist. It's due to like building muscle, but it still kind of sucks, honestly. Yeah. So, yeah.
So people will be able to, whenever you put it up, find it on, I guess.
Yeah. I've got two people I'm talking to, two friends that I'm talking to right now on Instagram about it. If they're not interested, then I'll put it up on the stories and then, you know, it'll go from there.
Nice.
So,
Cool. And I don't have anything for this one. So why don't we just get to know you a little better, Leonard? And, you know, I think, yeah, so...
Or in my case, at all.
Yeah. Because, I mean, even though BDD, I think, is recognized in our niche, not everyone may know your story. So so we did prepare a few questions and I think let's just jump into it, because the first one would be, when did you get hooked on denim?
Yeah, so I think it was when I was around 15 or 16 years old. I was in high school, early 2000s, mm-hmm. so 2000 or 2001.
Yeah.
It was due to Avizu.
Yeah.
Which was one of the major niche denim brands at that time. It's that same time period where when Scott Morrison was working for them from one of your previous episodes.
Yeah.
So I was still a consumer back then, a kid, high school kid, when he was doing that, and yeah, that was the brand that got me interested in denim. And it was actually the Selvage line that I really liked. You know, there were some kids in school wearing these jeans with high turnips, and I really liked the colorful edge on the outside. Didn't know what it was.
Yeah.
I went to a local store. I'm originally from The Hague. I live in Amsterdam now, but I am from The Hague. And there was a store called Mode Emploi,
mm-hmm.
Which was owned by the owner of Atelier La Durance,
exactly.
Gerard Parks.
Yeah.
He was a big name in denim back then.
Yeah.
And so I went to his store, and the staff working there, they told me what it was and what the brand was and where it came from, and they were really expensive, really expensive jeans, and I didn't have the money to buy a pair of Avizus yet. So instead I bought a pair of Lee.
Mm-hmm.
It was a pre-wash actually, 101Z.
Yeah.
And half Selvage, but still.
Oh, I wore them. Yeah, I saw that one in your studio. Yeah.
Yeah, I think I showed it to him. I still have them, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
Worn them quite hard. Worn them with big turn-ups like Dale did. And that was the beginning for me, when I started really, when I noticed like all these details in the jeans. And, you know, I got caught by the denim virus, or the indigo virus, some would say.
Mm-hmm.
It was the same time when the forums on the internet were emerging.
Yeah.
Forums like Super Denim on Super Future, and you have My Nudies, which came a little bit later. Those were the two that I was most active on.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, if you go on Super Denim right now, and if you go on Super Denim right now and you search for the Avizu threat, then you can see that it's started by me, uh-huh. Benzak.
So your yeah. username was Benzak there already.
Yeah, my username was Benzak. Yeah, because I will get to that later, but it's an old nickname of mine.
Okay.
But anyway, so by the time I was like 18, I had collected a whole bunch of mainly Japanese jeans,
mm-hmm.
Studio D'Artisan, Denim, mainly the Osaka 5 brands. Mm-hmm. And then, yeah, I started like researching them myself. There wasn't a lot available, like it is right now. So there were some books, there was the forums, but it was very, very limited. So a lot of the research I did by just looking at this product, and they were talking about things like roping and roping effect and things like that. And I was like, what is this? And then I was comparing my Japanese jeans with some cheaper jeans that I still had. And then I started seeing the differences and seeing like, oh, that's what they talk about. Oh, that's this detail. Oh, that's that detail. Yeah. And for some people that's just, okay, that's it. But I was really, really interested, by it. So when I was 18, I just realized, okay, I want to be in this industry. I want to have my own brand. I want to do this. And I didn't have the urge to do it like better or because than the Japanese brands, because it's, they already do an amazing job. And I'm still up to till this date, I'm still a big fan of a lot of these brands. But I just wanted to be their competitor. That was my goal.
Mm-hmm.
So I went to study at AMFI, yep, which is the Amsterdam Fashion Institute. I did the fashion management course over there, which is focusing on two aspects of the business. It's either the sales part or the production part. And I majored in the production area because I like the technical stuff. So I'm not a designer, but I'm a product developer. That's my profession. So a product developer needs to know everything about fits, everything about fabrics, how to produce things, prices, stuff like that.
Yeah.
And that is, I mean, I think that for denim, there are no like traditional designers, like the catwalk or couture kind of designers. That's non-existent. Most of the denim designers are in fact developers because you have your blueprint, you know, you have your five pocket jeans, or in Benzac's case, it's now six pocket jeans, but, and you use that to create your own product by creating the fit that you want, selecting the fabrics, the threads. It's a developer's job, basically.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what I learned, the basis, at least, I learned at AMFI. And so for my final thesis, I was trying to do some research for the Amsterdam office of Evisu. But yeah, that didn't work out because they had to close down by that time. I think it was mentioned before in the podcast as well. So that didn't work. And I was already working on my business plan for Benzac.
Mm-hmm.
And then I convinced my tutors to just use that as my final thesis. So, that was 2008. Yeah, oh. It was 2008.
Okay.
When I graduated with my business plan for Benzac. And Benzac was a little bit different back then. I always had the idea and the dream to have my own brand, jeans produced in Japan. But there were a few let's call it challenges.
Yeah.
I was just fresh out of school. Didn't have the context. Didn't know where to start. You know, I had my ideas, but you need to have a solid producer. You need to have money. Mm-hmm. So my idea was to create private label collections for anyone who wants it, like shops or companies. I had a manufacturer in Turkey,
mm-hmm,
back then, who could do that. And then I would do my own brand slowly on the side.
Mm-hmm.
So that whole private label thing didn't really work out. So I started working for a Dutch brand on the denim development department, learning a lot, still building my own brand on the side, small little projects, small item, like small production runs of items.
Yeah.
Mainly promoting it through the forums. And then I think it was in 2011, when I was on a business trip to Bangkok for one of my former employers, I met the people from the Japan Blue Group.
Exactly.
So that's the company that owns Momotaro, Japan Blue, the Mail Collect, and they have a couple of other brands in house. I met them through a mutual denim friend, let's say, from Bangkok, because he was helping them set up some business in Thailand. And they had a event at a mall, a shopping mall. So I went there just to meet them. And at that time, I was already pretty far into my plan of launching the Japan line. The only thing that was still missing was a manufacturer, which is quite important if you want to produce jeans.
Yeah.
Produce anything, you need someone to produce it for you.
Yeah.
So I just talked to one of these guys from Japan Blue, and I asked them, like, do you also do productions for other brands? Like, is it only your own brand, or do you also do productions in your factory for other brands? And he said, yeah, we do that. And that's cool, because I have this plan, and I want to do jeans in Japan, and I have these ideas, and can you let me know who to talk to? And he said, yeah, that would be me.
Was this Ray already, or?
No, that's Kishimoto. He's he's now I think he's now the managing director of Japan Blue, something like that.
Yeah.
He's one of the the big bosses over there now. He said to me, well, just send me your plans and we will see what we can do.
Yeah.
His English was okay enough to do that. So it's always tricky, but that worked.
Mm-hmm.
And when I sent everything to him, he was happily surprised, because he didn't expect me to be already so well prepared. I had everything ready, like the patterns were even ready. I had them made by someone in Amsterdam, and it was just literally just looking for a manufacturer. So we started developing, that led to the launch of the brand, the Japanese line, with only two jeans, or two styles, two small production runs, and some accessories, which and t-shirts that I produced elsewhere.
Mm-hmm.
And that's almost 6 years ago now, and that's where it started. That's when the brand was launched. Yeah.
Great. So I think by now, Jake, I guess you know Leonard a little better.
Yeah, that's really cool. Was not aware of that specifically. So, but it really kind of makes sense looking at some of the fabrics now that I think about that.
Mm-hmm.
In what way?
Just know, like, the some of the Benzac fades I've seen just remind me of Japan Blue Group fades in a lot of ways.
Yeah,
like,
well, people... Yeah, well, we mainly use for our made in Japan line, because we have a made in Japan line, and we also have a made in Europe line. But for the made in Japan line, we exclusively use collect fabrics. Yeah. So
yeah,
they are woven on a lot of the same, probably literally the same shuttle looms that Japan Blue and Momotaro both use as well as many other brands, obviously. That's a good observation.
I didn't make the connection completely, but I've seen some Benzac fades that look super similar to some, especially like the double indigos reminded me of like the Japan Blue or like the Blue Owl and Momotaro collabs.
Mm.
Not that they're exact same fabric, but it definitely reminded me of those types of fades with like the double indigos that I've seen.
Yeah.
My buddy Dry Luke, has some like gorgeously faded Benzacs.
Oh yeah.
Yeah,
and those are the ones I'm thinking of. So that's really cool to hear that.
Yeah,
and great choice because I love Momotaro and their fabrics and everything. So that's really
It's a great.
That's
brand.
Pretty awesome. Yeah. So do you mind me asking? And I don't know, maybe I missed this, but because you have lines that are they're sewn in Japan too. Is the sewing done by them as well? Is that done differently? Is that something you can share, or is that a trade secret?
Yeah.
Which is fine if it is.
No, it's no. That I can share that up to a certain point, of course. So the made in Japan line is like you say, it's 100% produced in Japan. So not only the fabrics are coming from Japan, but the actual manufacturing, the stitching, is done in Japan as well, and it's been taken care of. So how they work, how Japan Blue Group works, is that they don't have like their own big in-house sewing facility, but they are from Kojima, and Kojima is like has a super high density of clothing manufacturers, fabric mills, dyeing houses, but it's all super small. They're all like small little workshops, and it's if you've ever been to a clothing factory elsewhere, even if you, I mean, Thomas, you've been to Kaniani.
Mm-hmm.
Kaniani is like mega big already compared to most of the places where I've been, at least in Kojima.
Okay.
So what they do is they work together with these little factories that are in the area. So we have our one fixed manufacturer. So we always use the same one, but it's a really small setup. I think the entire floor is not bigger than 100 square meters.
Wow.
It's basically just a studio. One sewing line.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. For most denim factories, it would be considered a small sampling room.
But this is what you see in the video that you did of your Japan tour some years ago, right?
Yes. Good that you remember that.
So if listeners want to see this while you listen, we can put a link into that video. It's great, by the way, produced by your brother. A good friend of mine too, but we put that in, and you can basically see this place. And is this also where you meet? You sit down with the guy that you first met in Bangkok, and you have that little meeting.
No.
Okay, that's a different guy.
No. That's where. You mean in the video? Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah, that's the same guy.
Cool.
Exactly. Yeah, that's a good call. Yeah, we have some footage of it.
Yeah.
So it's definitely not a secret.
No.
No.
Sounds cool.
No. But they I've seen a lot of great brands in the same factory as well. I think I even saw some Joe McCoy's also being produced over there.
Nice.
Talking about McCoy's, so yeah. Mm.
It's very cool.
Yeah.
Right. So let's talk a bit about details of jeans, because that's one thing that is, I mean, of course, it's, you know, a part of all jeans. But I think when you look closely on a pair of Benzacs, you will notice that, you know, if you didn't pick that up by now already, Leonard is very particular about his, you know, he's, if you think I'm structured, Jake, Leonard is like, you know, crazy. I mean, I'm nothing. So he's very detail focused. I mean, he just told you that he had everything ready before he even got his manufacturer. That's kind of crazy, I think. So they could just push the button more or less, right, and put it out. And but also the details on Benzac jeans, I think they're quite interesting and different. So, I mean, one of them, you already mentioned it, Leonard, but, you know, that there's actually a sixth pocket. There's a second coin pocket. And you know, I know the story that, you know, you have, yeah, one is on... So the sixth one tells it's on the left side, right?
Yeah. Yeah, that's an idea that came from the fact that jeans are constantly evolving.
Mm-hmm.
So in the 19th century, 1800s, jeans actually only had four pockets.
Four pockets, yeah.
Yeah. So the mine workers, they were using it for... they were using their pockets for their tools or pieces of gold or something. And at one point, I think they just realized, yeah, we need an extra pocket. And a lot of people think that the fifth pocket is the coin pocket, but it's actually a second back pocket.
Exactly.
So, yeah, so jeans used to have only one back pocket when it was still actual workwear. Then the user of jeans, it changed over time. It evolved. Like, it was lumberjacks, cowboys eventually.
Mm-hmm.
And in the 60s, it became a signature for rebels. And in the 70s, 80s, it starting to be more like a fashion product, when they also start to do the first washes and things like that. So it's a product with a rich history.
Mm-hmm.
That is evolving. And my idea was came from looking at, like, who's wearing jeans right now, who are wearing jeans right now. And my customer, the Benzac customer, I consider them basically the modern day cowboy. But yeah, the modern day cowboy, like all of us, we have usually with so much stuff with us. You know, you have your phone, you have your keys, a wallet. If you smoke, you have cigarettes and a lighter. You have some gum, loose change. We carry a lot of stuff with us nowadays, and you don't always want to carry a bag. So I was thinking we need to evolve the product again, and it needs another pocket.
Mm-hmm.
So looking at the basic design, like I talked before, the basic like five pocket structure, I didn't want to change that because that is the product that I fell in love with and still love. So I was looking for the most convenient and also less loud place or in your face place to position a sixth pocket. And for me, the only position to do that was on the opposite side of the coin pocket. So for your wearer's left side on the front pocket facing, I placed an extra layer of fabric. It has exposed selvage underneath the waistband, and the reason for that is it's not to show the selvage. That's not the purpose. I got some comments from people that saying like, yeah, why do you do that? It's too flashy, and I wish it didn't have that. But then I tell them like, okay, it's the reason for it to have the selvage over there. It can remain one layer of fabric.
Mm-hmm.
And the waistband is, because it's folded, it's a bit thicker. So the selvage is like perfectly aligned with the waistband now. And then if you wear a belt, which most of us do anyway all the time, even if we don't even need to wear a belt, it just looks better.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. it hides the entrance of the pocket. It hides the selvage.
Yeah.
So that's why I also call it the hidden six pocket. So when you wear a belt, your Benzo jeans will still look like a pair of five pocket jeans, but it has this little extra pocket. And then that's a detail that I use with all the jeans. It's the signature detail.
Yeah.
So it's really not flashy at all.
No.
It's no, because you don't see it.
Yeah. No, I like that. I think that's cool. That's a great explanation behind it. Honestly, I think that's really cool.
And I think
I really like the hidden aspect of details anyway, because in my opinion, when you have a gray pair of jeans, it should look as great on the inside as on the outside, maybe even better, you know. Yeah. When you turn the jeans inside out, it needs to be like perfect stitching, nice details. Yeah.
And then to add, and maybe you were going to say this yourself already, but you know, I think you told me, or you've explained earlier that also that, you know, the hidden, so it's like basically the six pocket is like what the Wrangler coin pocket would be, and then the normal one on the right side, it's either sort of, you know, made as the, or it has the, you know, size construction of the Levi's or the Lee. Is that correct?
No, that's the story about the you can find a Levi's and Wrangler shape coin pockets in the Benzo jeans, or at least in the Made in Japan line. But that is about the actual coin pocket. So the hidden pocket is always the same. It does look like the Wrangler coin pocket a little bit, because one of the traditional Wrangler coin pockets is in fact a pocket that goes all the way up to the waistband too.
Mm-hmm.
But what I've done in the beginning for the Japan line is to differentiate the different, like, the fits. So each fit has their own coin pocket, and that was inspired by the big three.
Mm-hmm.
Now at the moment in the collection, you will only find Lee and Levi's inspired coin pockets. There used to be a Wrangler version as well. That was on the 710.
Okay.
That's the green cast that Rudy's Jeans Freak is
beating out
is wearing
right now.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, but that's a discontinued style at the moment. But I might bring it back, that coin pocket shape, to nice. Have it like complete again, to be able to offer all three coin pocket shapes.
Yeah, it's a nice touch. Yeah. Nice.
Because I still wanted to have some kind of relation to these original three brands, what it started all with. You know, mm-hmm. I'm still a fan. I'm still a big denim nerd. So I don't think that everything that I do is better or something like that. You know, you need to, there are certain details that are just good and there, and you don't touch it.
Yeah,
just,
exactly. Just it's sort of like it and, what I often call the sort of the defining details, right? That you, it's what defines a five pocket jean. And, you know, if it doesn't have, you know, so yours is actually a six pocket jean, but it's still like, it's so subtle that, like you said, people often maybe don't even notice that this is six pocket. But
exactly.
So, yeah. But why is it that, you know, then that the details of jeans are important to you?
Well, it's obviously a personal taste. What intrigued me when I was still learning about denim in general, when I started collecting these Japanese brands, was their precision and the way how tight the construction was, and details like having a chain stitch waistband where the chain stitch is going from beginning till end. Mm-hmm. And that's if you have a pair of jeans with you, you can check that yourself, like how till where is the chain stitch on the inside.
So basically you unbutton the top button if you're wearing jeans. I'm doing this right now as I'm speaking. And then you'll see that the chain stitch goes all the way out. Whereas on some jeans, you know, you'll see that there's actually a lock stitch sort of where the fly is, right?
Exactly.
But why is that? Exactly. Why is that a, you know, let's say, quote unquote, you know, good detail?
It's not per se better.
No.
It's more difficult to do it like that.
Mm-hmm.
It requires some skill to do it like that. And it is so, yeah, it's much neater.
Mm-hmm.
And that for me is the most important thing. It's just clean and neat, and that doesn't mean that your jeans, if it doesn't have it, is going to break sooner or something like that. Doesn't have anything to do with quality whatsoever,
like durability. Is it kind of like the roping or something like that? You know, that's more a bit sentimental in a way. It's not really functional, but it's just, or any historical.
It is for historical for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it is. But it just looks nice, and that's also something that we want from time to time, right?
Exactly.
And even though no one sees it, you know it.
Yeah.
You know, and that's.
Yeah.
And that's a reason. You know, that could be a reason. And there are more like these details in the jeans. Another thing commonly used, but for the Japan line, we do that too, is the hidden rivets. So you can see the rivets only on the inside.
Mm-hmm.
We use...
or when you wear it down. I mean, basically it's going to show, but it's going to take a little while.
Yeah, well, it's not meant to be shown.
No.
because then damage your back pocket too much, I think. There are many details in the jeans to be found. One of the things that I think is very, very important, but also very, very subtle, is the use of different yarns.
Mm-hmm.
Like the threads to stitch them together.
Yeah.
So there is a total of 7 different variations in the jeans. We talk about 3 different colors. We talk about 2 different thicknesses and a couple of different SPIs.
Mm.
SPI stands for stitch per inch.
Yep.
So the higher SPI count, the smaller the stitches.
Exactly.
And by using this variety of different colors and thicknesses and SPIs, you will create a lot of depth in the product, and it is something that you don't see, you don't recognize immediately if you just look at the jeans. You will see that they look nice. if you put like a pair of jeans next to it that only has one color or one thickness, then you will definitely see the difference, and then you understand why this pair, like a pair of made in Japan Denso jeans, might attract you more than something that don't have these kind of details. that also means obviously that in production they have to change machines a lot and things like that. So it takes a little bit more time.
Yeah.
It's more time consuming. There's a detail that is a combination between like getting it historically right and improving it for durability, and that's the inseam.
All right.
So I really like the look of the overlocked inseam. So that's when you turn up the jeans on the inside, on the inseam, you see an overlock stitch. And the outside shows only one stitching line. I like that look, but a felt seam or a lap seam, which is a clean construction, is stronger and looks better. But it has two needles, so it's two stitching. So what I did was use one contrasting on the one contrasting yarn color and one tonal yarn color. So it still has the same look of the overlock stitch, yeah. But then with the strength and durability of the felt seam.
I think actually, so calling back episode 10, where we had Ben Viapiano, and we talked about this exact thing, and I too really like the look of the overlock, and I'm Jake, you do too, because you're all into repro jeans, right? So but this is a nice touch also with the, if you do like the fold, the lap seam, right? It's there's more layers of fabric, so it also gets a little thicker. I guess.
Yeah, it's four layers of fabric, yeah. While overlocked seam is three layers of fabric.
Yeah.
Yep. I remember that. It's exactly what Ben said. So.
Yeah. he put you to school on that one.
I think he took everybody to school on that one.
Oh, yeah.
Yes, including me. But
yeah, he did.
He took me to school before the podcast. I got schooled before the podcast even happened, luckily.
Yeah.
By him.
No, it's good. So, but talking about the detail, I mean, also the details of Bentec jeans, but also your personal, favorites. What would that be like? If you pick one detail on a pair of classic jeans, like, what is your favorite one?
That's such a difficult question because it's I think that. Just a single detail itself can be nice, but it's the combination of different details and how you use it with what type of fabric and things like that makes it really, really nice. So, yeah, obviously it started for me with selvage, and selvage denim. The showing the selvage edge on the outseam is probably then my favorite detail.
Mm-hmm.
I do like a small selvage width though.
Yeah.
So okay. Most jeans have like around a total width of 2 centimeters. But the jeans that I develop have a maximum width of 1.5, so it's a bit more subtle.
Okay.
I like subtle stuff,
Yeah.
I like details, but just for yourself. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I love that too, and I'm sure a lot of the listeners will recognize the feeling of, just looking at your jeans and you don't know exactly why you like it and you don't even care if other people see it. It's just that you like it, whatever the detail might be, if it's a pockets or if it's the fade or whatever it is, the selvage edges.
Yeah. I think it is a really a personal thing. And then it's always good if you can find like-minded people to talk about this,
yeah.
This obsession with,
because normal with people might no think you yeah normal people might think you're crazy, right? So
how's your take on that, Jack? Because you're not the denim nerd like we are. I mean, you're more of a boot nerd, I guess.
People don't want to talk about everything. It's kind of funny. I've noticed though, the more time I've spent with people my own like that aren't, I guess, like my own age, because I don't really have a lot of, like, besides like the denim friends I hang out with, like I don't really have a lot of friends outside. So I started my master's program, and my style gets complimented a lot, and not the no, but nobody cares about the jeans part of it. It's really interesting. So like, it's kind of to your point of like, yeah, no one's going to want to hear about like the denim nerd stuff. And to be fair, no one's going to want to hear about like me talking about how well freewheelers can stitch a leather jacket either. They don't care about that.
No,
but people still just care about, you know, the clothing itself. And even when I get compliments on how I'm dressed, people always say like, oh, they always say the word fashion. And I always want to correct him on that.
Oh, yeah.
Because I yeah. you know, the,
yeah,
this,
I
you
do
know
that,
the saying,
I do that all the time.
Fashion is fleeting, style is forever, right? You know, that, and I fully agree with that statement. But yeah, it definitely, like the types of compliments I do get on stuff, it definitely reminds me all the time. I mean, it's cool. I like it. I do appreciate it, obviously. But it reminds me of like, yeah, people are only going to want to talk to you so in depth about certain things. I mean, and in fairness, like I don't want to talk too in depth about, you know, something that I'm not as interested in. Right. So.
No, I know. Yeah. I mean, yeah, it's like if you came up to a person and started asking about, you know, whatever, and they just ramble on for hours. It's like, okay, I just wanted to know this specific thing.
Yeah, somebody started talking to me about all the intricacies of cigars. Like,
yeah, exactly.
That's really cool. Like, and that's awesome that you're into that. It wouldn't matter to me because I just can't deal with tobacco, period. You know what I mean?
So. Yeah. Right. But the question is, so Jake, what is your favorite detail?
My favorite
detail. I love.
Oh, Jake's favorite.
Yeah.
And I'm not just trying to just be nice to Leonard, but I loved his non-answer.
Exactly.
That was the best.
Me too.
That was the best non-answer of. Like, there is no one single detail. And especially for me, it's tough because I'm such a huge Connor Sewing Factory fan, and their whole thing is perfection in a complete lack of perfection. They are the best at being not great. Like, it's a really, really weird thing. So for me, like, there is no one detail about Connor Sewing Factory that makes it great. It's the fact that it's everything. Like, he would not be the best 40s Levi's repro brand unquestionably if he didn't get everything right about it. Not just the the physical details of the jeans, but the fabrics and the fact that he only uses period correct sewing machines and all that. So the way that he makes it, he hand folds it, he does make sure he has to do all of that to be that guy. So if I had to pick one thing, I would say fabric. And so it's because, and that's not even a universal thing. Like, there is no one thing about jeans. For me, like, I think what I get the most jazzed about is like the perfect, aside from Connors, like before Connors, it was like about the fabric. Or, as always with me, really, 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 really dense and neat stitching, because that's kind of just something I always really, really love.
That's a vintage, very vintage detail. The high stitch count. Yeah.
Which might be partly why I'm not as into PBJ, even though PBJ is great. Like, they very specifically and deliberately use much lower SPI, you know, so.
Yeah. But it varies throughout their jeans. I mean, they have, like, the waistbands have very big stitches. But other parts of the of their jeans, for example, the inseams is much, much smaller. So it's I think that's nice about PBJ. It's the variation.
Oh yeah, no, they're not great. It's just like for me personally, like, and for me, I think their fabrics are even more like slubby or extreme than even I would like than I would prefer. Like when I like. A denim fabric, like, has got to be a kind of a balance, like, not a balance, but not too extreme. Like, my all-time favorite fabric is the last RJB fabric was, like, the left-hand twill that, like, everybody had as a collaboration pair and said it was exclusive, but, like, Corlection had one, Riveted and Hyde had one, Selfedge had one. All of those last collaborations, if you look at the, like, the Flathead X RJB, I think even Tate and Yoko had one, too. All of the last RJB jeans that came out, that left-hand twill fabric, that's like my all time. And I have a pair too, signed by Kobayashi-san, that's my favorite fabric of all time. And my second favorite is the RJB fabric before that.
All right. So I think we're getting to the end of this topic now. And we do have one question that we want to answer in this episode. So this one is coming from Kristen Stefan. Sorry if I'm not pronouncing that correctly. He's from Switzerland and he sent a very nice email. He has a question about Taiwan jackets. The one thing I realized is that the button and the opening to the one end of the arms on the inner side, why is this? Okay, so his question is basically, so we're down at the cuffs, that's what he's talking about, and that the cuffs are on sort of on where your wrist, on the inside of your wrist, I think. And that's not on the Type 2 and Type 3. So I think that's the question, if we know... have any input on why that is and why it developed like that.
It's probably an improvement.
Yeah, exactly, right?
It's what they usually do with the jackets and the jeans and everything. It's always an improvement because that's from a time when denim, both jeans and jackets, were only used as functional wear. So all details that they changed has to be from a functional point of view.
Exactly.
It's the same thing when they started on jeans, like getting rid of the suspender buttons and adding belt loops and things like that.
Yeah.
But I'm also not 100% sure.
No, it makes sense. But when you think of it, like logically, if you have a button on the inside of your wrist, then whenever you put your hands down on a table or something like that, you know, it's going to touch... right there, yeah. It can be a little annoying. And then moving it maybe to the side is, yeah, it's just practical.
I think, because my assumption is, so what I like about having the button on the inside like that is it makes it way easier to button it up when you put it on.
Yeah, that's
if
true.
If you're unbuttoning it and putting it back on. And when it's originally a work jacket, you're not sitting at a table, really. So it doesn't matter that it's in the way. Then people started using them more casually. This is just my guess, right? Mm-hmm. People start using it more casually and they start, you know, sitting down and eating at tables, and then it becomes annoying. So then they move it out of the way. And the practicality of putting it on and off isn't as big of a deal anymore. It's more the practicality of like it getting in the way when you're using it like at a desk or, you know, at a table.
Yeah.
That's just that's my guess.
Makes sense.
Yeah.
Right. So, Kristen, I hope that was a somewhat useful answer. And that brings us to the end of this episode. So, we do have one more to come with you, Leonard. So, that's going to be coming out next week. But for now, thank you for joining us on this one. And for the listeners out there, if you haven't already done so, please go into iTunes, leave a rating and review. It still helps us a lot to get to the top of iTunes in our category. So, thank you, Leonard, and we'll catch you in the next one.